Well, good morning, everyone.
We're going to get started here because we've got today on the agenda students from rural Minnesota who've come a long way, some of them, to be here, and so I don't want to shortchange them. Welcome to the Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development, it's nice to be back at the Capitol. See a lot of new members. Representative McFarland, we forgot you on the sheet, and I apologize for that because we double checked it. I'm just going to tell you quickly what we're going to do today. We're going to have introductions. We're going to have a very, very, very quick overview by Doug Berg, and I don't know if Ron Soderberg also wants to say a few things, Ron. I think he's just going to let Doug handle it. These are our two fiscal analysts. And then we're going to get right to business and listen to some of the students that have come from around the state. So with that, I guess I will start off, and I'll go to my left because that's just the natural course for me. So my name is Tom Rukavina, and I'm a state representative from the Iron Range. I represent from Buell, Minnesota to White Lakes. You want to take it next, Sue?
My name is Sue Scott. I'm the committee legislative assistant.
I'm Kathy Novak, and I'm with the House Research Department.
I'm Representative Jean Poppy. I represent District 27B, which is in southern Minnesota, the city of Austin, and I actually work at Riverland Community College.
I'm Andy Welty, State Representative for District 30B. I represent the communities of Plainview, Elgin, Dover, Yoda, Stuartville, Chatfield, and the fringes of Rochester. And the higher ed institution in and near my district is University Center Rochester, where we have Winona State University presence, the University of Minnesota presence, and Rochester Community and Technical College. And we also have a number of private universities that are beginning to move into Rochester as well. So there's a large higher ed presence. And I will not forget the Mayo School of Medicine as well. It educates a number of the up-and-coming doctors for Minnesota and the country.
Hi, Karen Clark, the representative of District 61A, which is basically three inner-city neighborhoods in South Minneapolis. And we have no higher education institutions within our district. However, those students who can afford to go, which is not as many as should be, go quite often to Minneapolis Community College or the Metro State.
And they'll be here tomorrow.
Excellent. And some, of course, to the university.
Good afternoon. I'm Representative Kim Norton from Rochester, Minnesota, and Representative Welty kind of took care of my whole district for me, so thank you.
I'm Representative Carol McFarland from 53B White Bear Lake, home of Century College.
And my Uncle Joey.
Yes. And you won't forget me.
Will you hear enough about this? We'll hear about Uncle Joe a lot this time.
I'm Bob Gunther. I represent District 24A, Fairmont, St. James, and Bluework. I'm looking forward to being on this committee.
I'm Linda Slocum. I represent District 53B, which is East Richfield, East and Central Bloomington. Normandale Community College is adjacent to me. I'm also a teacher. I teach 7th and 8th graders things they don't want to know, like geography and American history, English, and I try and make it fun.
I'm Mary Murphy. I'm from District 6B, which borders Representative Brooke Venus. District on the south. I have Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College about a mile and a half outside of my district. I have Lake Superior College in my district. I have the University of Minnesota Duluth out about three blocks outside of my district, and the College of St. Scholastica, which is in my district and which with my alma mater.
Mike, do you want to just start? Go ahead.
I'm Mike Ballou, and I'm the Republican researcher for the scientific committee.
David Musilevich, House BFL researcher.
I'm Ron Soderberg. I'm a fiscal analyst with the House.
State Representative Bud Nornes from District 10A. representing Furtis Falls and a number of small communities in west central Minnesota in West Otter Tail County. And I have a community college in my community.
I'm Representative Bob Detmer, representing 52A, which is the Forest Lake and Columbus, Scandia, Lionel, and Columbus. And I have an extra student here with me today, one of my students from Forest Lake High School, Dave Hallhaber. Would you stand up?
Welcome.
And he's shadowing me today.
Tell us what he did at the end of the day, okay? So.
And I had an interesting discussion with the chancellor of the university system. He says my district currently has 2,500 students that are attending college. So.
I'm Connie Ruth. I represent Owatonna and Waseca, and we have the Owatonna College University Center, and you can start, Riverland comes in, you can start your education and complete it there. We have a number of colleges coming in, so excited to be here.
Dan Searson, I represent District 14A, Stock Rapids, Sartell, Rice, Holden, Ford, and St. Stephen, and we have a ton of higher education area schools in our area. At St. Cloud State, the Votek College there, and St. John, St. Ben, so it's a great committee to be on. I appreciate it.
I'm Representative David Blythe from District 25B, and I have two distinguished private colleges in my district, Carleton and St. Olaf, and my colleague here, Frank Moe, is a graduate of Carleton. I'm a graduate of St. Olaf, and as a number of members in the institution have also gone through those institutions as well. And I happen to be a teacher in a alternative school, and I know that alternative high school, and I know that we also need to find higher education for students who are looking elsewhere besides those institutions.
Representative Frank Moe, District 4A, which includes the community of Bemidji, home of Bemidji State University and Northwest Technical College. Cass Lake, Minnesota is actually closer to my house, and that is Leech Lake Tribal College. And I don't often tell my constituents where I went to college. It's not necessarily an asset up there. And also I teach at Bemidji State University, and the explosion of college tuition is the first issue that actually got me interested in running for office. So you have the rising tuition to blame for having to listen to me in this committee.
You want to talk about your sled dogs today, or
no?
We'll do that another thing.
No, I can keep my dogs away from you, Tony. Mr. Chairman.
Kathy Briner, Mankato, 23B. It's the city of Mankato, surrounding townships, and just a little sliver of North Mankato. And we have quite a few fantastic post-secondary opportunities in our community. Minnesota State University, Mankato. South Central College, whom we have some guests from today, is in North Mankato, and Bethany College in Rasmussen. So I'm glad to be on this committee.
I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee, and you'll see more of me in just a minute.
Jim Geldman, committee administrator.
Well, members, I thought we'd just have a quick and a very quick overview by Doug. And by the way, you know, Mr. Berg is a wealth of information, as is Mr. Soderberg. And I'm happy to have two former Republican chairs of the committees that kind of melded into this one, Representative Norness and Representative Gunter, with me to help guide me. That, not to say I'm and listen to you all the time, but certainly not much of the time. And I just want you to know that, you know, Mr. Berg and Mr. Soderberg work for all of you on this committee, and if you have any questions on fiscal matters or policy matters, they're both at your disposal, as they are to the rest of the House of Representatives. And Mr. Berg has informed me even sometimes to senators who are nice, which might not be that often. I don't know. Mr. Berg, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members. As Chairman Riccovina said, I'm going to do just an extremely brief overview of what the purview of this committee is. In members' packets, there's just a real short three-page item. That the first page is a list of titled Higher Education Workforce Development Committee Accounts. And it's also on the screen. It's going to be probably unreadable on the screen, but that's okay. Members all have it in their packets. And just very briefly, this committee comprises all of what the old higher education finance committees were in the last biennium, plus parts of economic development accounts. And you can see we have, starting at the top, a variety of professional licensing boards, the Board of Accountancy, Architecture and Engineering, Barber and Cosmetology Examining. Those boards issue professional licenses, conduct examinations. They're fee-based. They charge a fee for a license, and the fee pays supports the operation of the organization. We have the Bureau of Mediation Services, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, commonly referred to as BEED. Members will know that from unemployment insurance, workforce centers, the jobs Z-zones they run. We have the Department of Labor and Industry, which members will know the programs that they largely are will recognize their workers' comp, job safety, building codes, labor standards. Higher Education Facilities Authority, I'll mention just a little bit more. This may be the only time members in this committee hear anything about HEFA this year. The Facilities Authority is a statutory authority that issues revenue bonds for construction of college facilities at nonprofit institutions, that is commonly known as the private colleges, and in two cases, I think, over their history, public institutions where they've been directed to do so by the legislature. They get no appropriation, either general fund or other fund. The three, I believe, employees of the authority are supported by fees to the institutions on the revenue bonds that are issued to support those facilities. So the only time you ever see them is when they come. There's a statutory debt limit that's currently at $800 million, and the only time it's ever an issue is when that debt ceiling gets raised, which doesn't happen frequently. The Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board, commonly known as the IRRRB, that also has no general fund. It's statutory. Probably we won't have a great deal of discussion or an appropriation for that. Although there could be policy items. Representative Welty mentioned the Mayo Clinic and Foundation, which we have a program that pays for slots in the medical school and in their family practice medicine program for Minnesota students. Just another note, this is different from the funding stream for the University of Minnesota Rochester campus that is under development. And it is also different from the biotechnology money that Mayo and the university receive, which is actually administered by BEED. This committee also has the Boxing Commission, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, the Office of Higher Education, which has all our financial aid programs for higher ed and state grants, work study, items like that, as well as some statewide library, electronic library functions and telecommunications functions, the University of Minnesota, and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. And then very briefly, if members just the next two pages, the second page has the larger of the two pies and just has the base budget for the general fund base budget for all the committees in this account, or in this, all the accounts in this committee, rather. And I just would point out to members, if you know the higher education items, the U of M, MNSCU, and the Office of Higher Education comprise 96% of the general fund expenditures in this committee. I mean, that's really overall where the bulk of the general fund money is. But as a comparison, and you can see the total is about $2.9 billion as a biennial budgetary base. If you go to the last page, you will see a similar graph, which is all funds for this committee. Changes a little bit. A couple things I would note on there. BEED becomes a large account under the all funds because there's a lot of non-general fund money at BEED and also labor and industry and some of these other accounts. Interestingly, members should know the U of M shrinks in size on this. It's not because their budget's actually that much. It gets smaller relative. But a lot of their federal funds and other non-general fund money does not flow through the state treasury, and so it does not show up on state budgetary numbers. None of the university's federal research money, for instance, would show up on the all funds graph, even though other federal funds would. Another example I would note that doesn't show up on there for financial aid members probably would think first of the Pell Grant program. It's the largest federal financial aid program. While our state grant piggybacks on that pretty closely and is integrated with it, the money there is a grant to an individual. Those monies also would not show up on the state budget chart because the grant goes from the Department of Education to a student, not to the state. Other than that, I guess I, Mr. Chair, I think members can contact me if they have, would like to ask any questions. I can get, if members want to start looking at the budget, the myself or Mr. Gelman can get you the budget narrative, which is available for each of these agencies out on the Department of Finance webpage. You'll be seeing that as we get into the budget cycle and look at each of the accounts. And the governor's budget has to come out on or before January 23rd, which is when we'll really start getting into these issues. And then there is a revenue forecast at the end of February, which will really tell us how much money there is to spend. And, Mr. Chair, that's all I have to present.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Berg. And as said, this is just a quick overview, and if you have, you know, specific questions, Mr. Gelman or Mr. Berg will get you whatever you need budget-wise. Representative Eastland and Mahoney, do you want to just introduce yourselves? Say a few words if you want about yourself. Representative Eastland.
I'm Representative Rob Eastland. I'm from District 17A. That's the area north of here, most of Isani County, a little bit of Chisago County, and the city of St. Francis in Anoka County. Been in the legislature 6 years, and this is my second term on higher ed, and look forward to working with new chair.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Tim. I'm Representative Tim Mahoney, and I represent 67A, which is just a few miles from here on the east side of St. Paul. This is starting my fifth term, and the last committee I was on for, I don't know, 6 years or so had many of these particular budgets in it, so I'm looking forward to the new parts of the budget that I'm not familiar with, which would be the higher ed stuff.
Okay, members, and I should also point out that Ms. Novak over here to my other left, Representative Abrams said, is a, also a wealth of information for you on policy issues besides budget issues. So, and as I said, they're independent, nonpartisan, and open to all of you to go to for questions. Members, it's my intention, and we've set up a number of students to come in front of the committee already, and today we've got two-year students from rural Minnesota, tomorrow from the metro area, and then we're going to the four-year institutions and to the university and the private and nonprofit schools and then the private for-profit, and then we're going to try to bring in people that have used the different workforce development dollars, etc., and then we're going to talk to those that administer those programs. And I was remiss, could the pages stand up and introduce themselves? I'm sorry, I forgot you. Welcome. Thank both of you for being here, and Representative Hartman, late, last but not least, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll have Scott Formo from Alexandria College come down. Representative Hartman.
Representative Melissa Hartman from Brooklyn Park.
Okay, and so we're going to get started right away. Scott, are you up there? I met Scott up in Virginia about a month ago, and he had the pleasure of telling me that he crashed his car onto a guardrail as he was coming out of Polkay, Representative Murphy. So we're going to listen to Scott and probably maybe give him some advice on driving skills. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Formal.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Chair Rutavina and committee members. My name is Scott Formo, and I'm a third-year student at Alexandria Technical College and the current president also of the Minnesota State College Student Association, which represents over 100,000 students from the two-year community and technical colleges here in Minnesota. I'd like to start by saying thank you for convening these hearings and allowing us the opportunity to come before you and talk about some of the student issues and student concerns, especially related to the rising cost of higher education, rising student debt loads, and what can be done here in Minnesota to help curtail these problems. I'd also like to point out that in each of your packets, we have provided written copies of all of our testimony, and one of the students, as the Chair Rukavina had pointed out earlier, Donna Williams from Fond du Lac Community and Tribal and Community College, had a family emergency and wasn't able to be here today, but her written testimony is provided in the packets for you. First of all, a little bit of background information for me. I'm a non-traditional student at Alexandria Technical College. I'm studying for my paralegal and business administration degrees, with future plans to pursue my bachelor's degree and eventually go on to law school and work in the legal and political field. After graduating high school in 1988, I did spend a little over a year at Alexandria Vocational Technical Institute, which is now Alexandria Technical College, studying accounting and supervisory management. At that time, I was able to work my way through school with a part-time job. Over the course of the summer, I was forced to relocate to a different part of the state for a full-time job opportunity and ended up not finishing my degrees at that time. Over the course of the next few years, I was married, had a son, and began to face some different challenges. After leaving college in pursuit of full-time employment, I worked in various managerial roles in both the restaurant and retail industries for nearly 15 years. Despite hard work and long hours, however, my family and I were still struggling to stay afloat financially as the cost of living was rising rapidly, but the wages weren't. According to the report, the State of Working Minnesota 2001, workers in Greater Minnesota have an even harder time making ends meet. While the cost of living in Greater Minnesota is 16% lower than that in the metro area, the average wages are 31% lower. Over the course of the past decade, changes in technology, the economy, the impacts of 9/11, the war on terrorism, and various other factors have all affected our lives greatly. Like many others, I began to look for other ways to provide for my family, and I suddenly realized that my limited education from a few years ago just wasn't good enough to compete in the industry any longer. When I entered the workforce back in the early 90s, an employee was able to gain skills and promotions through experience and merit, even with a limited education, but today that's just not the case. Over time, my wife and I were just not able to find the family-supporting wages that we desperately needed, and this unfortunately took a heavy toll on our marriage, which recently ended in divorce. After our separation, I was facing tougher times than I had ever imagined, and finally made the decision to return to school and try to pick up the skills and education that I needed to succeed in the workplace. And at that same time, my then-wife also returned to school for the exact same reasons. I'm fortunate to have the opportunity to have been able to return to school, and I feel that for me it was more than a personal choice, it was a necessity. This period of my life was very difficult, and I faced many problems that are common amongst non-traditional students. While I found it somewhat difficult to transition from the workforce to a full-time student again, this wasn't my biggest challenge. My biggest challenge was finding a way to survive financially and still stay in school. As I mentioned earlier, I'm studying for my paralegal and business administration degrees or pursuing a double major. I made this choice after talking with the admission reps and faculty advisors at Alec Tech in an effort to transfer some of the credits that I had earned earlier when I was in school, and get a combination of degrees along with matching it to the job skills and experience that I had from the workforce. I'm attempting to be as efficient as possible with my career and educational goals and maximize all my efforts that I've put in over the past 18 years to provide for a better future for me and my family. While I was in school in the late 80s, I can remember that my financial aid was enough to cover the cost of my books, supplies, and tuition, which at that time was only $29 a credit. And working part-time was enough to cover my living expenses. Now, this current semester, I'm paying $200 a credit for my classes, an 86% increase in tuition at the same college that I had attended earlier. Today, my financial aid is barely enough to cover the extra costs that I have to pay for college. For example, the first semester of my classes, my textbooks ran approximately $750, and I'm also required to lease a laptop for the program that I'm in, which runs $375 each semester that I'm in school. Since returning to school in 2004, I've been forced to take out extra money in student loans, work full-time, but luckily I've also had the assistance of my family to help cover some of the other living expenses after moving into a duplex apartment that my parents own and moving back home to live with my parents. There have been many times that I've considered dropping out of school because I'm just barely able to get by financially, let alone try to provide for my family or save for my 10-year-old son's future education, who, by the way, is here today in support of higher education and my pursuits for a college degree. I've continued to work on my degrees because I realized that I was not able to get a job that I needed to survive before, and if I dropped out at this point, I'd be back in the same boat, if not worse. I also realize that there's many other non-traditional students that are being forced to return to school to upgrade their skills to stay competitive in today's changing workforce. Again, according to the State of Working Minnesota 2001 report, the wage needed to support a single-parent family of two is $13.94 an hour. This figure assumes that families receive income tax credits they're entitled to, but doesn't take into account any expenses such as debt payments, entertainment, vacations, or even savings. The report goes further to explain that wages in greater Minnesota are more likely to be insufficient despite the lower cost of living. According to the 2006 third quarter detailed occupational data from the Department of Employment and Economic Development, the average starting wage for paralegals and legal assistants is approximately $15.10 an hour, just $1.16 an hour greater than the wage needed to support a single parent family of two. That amounts to approximately $46 a week or $185 a month before taxes, which is not going to be enough to take care of my debt payments, let alone anything else that might come up. Furthermore, in an effort to survive financially and keep going with college, while I have continued to work, I've also been forced to take out, as I stated earlier, to date, $18,000 in federal student loans. And that's just what I've taken out to get through my first 3 years of college while pursuing my two-year degrees. I do anticipate completing my two-year degrees within the next year, and will then work on transitioning to my four-year degree in law school, so the $18,000 is not the total debt I'll have by the time I'm done. It's just the beginning. I've been taking as many credits as possible while at the same time balancing job and family time. This, coupled with classes not being offered on a regular basis, has slowed down the final attainment of my degrees. Like many other students in the two-year system, missing just one single class in the sequence can easily put you behind in your class schedule for up to an entire year while you wait for it to be offered again. Depending on the class itself, there may even be more of a delay, as I've encountered on two different occasions where the missing class is a prerequisite for other classes that are needed, meaning that you're forced to miss not only that one class, but put off your following classes until the following year when you can get that one class out of the way also. According to the financial aid repayment calculators, just to pay off the current $18,000 that I owe in loans, an income contingent repayment plan would cost me approximately $160 a month, but amount to an additional $7,000 in interest, or $220 a month on fixed monthly payments, neither of which I'll have the extra income for based upon the current estimates for the paralegal degree. This leads me to wonder whether returning to school was actually the right choice in the first place, and if it's going to get me further ahead and allow me to provide for my family like I had planned, or if I'm going to end up accumulating so much debt that I'm not going to be any better off. It also makes me wonder how I'll provide my son with the necessities that he needs, or allow for any type of savings for emergencies such as auto repairs, medical expenses, other sudden expenses that can arise, or saving for his college education in about 8 years. Unemployment in Minnesota has been creeping up and doesn't recognize the full number of potential workers, as it only includes people actively seeking work. Discouraged workers, a portion of the underemployed population, which includes people who have looked for work in the past but are no longer doing so, or those workers who are working part-time but would prefer full-time work, are not included in unemployment reports. Minnesota's economic advantage is the quality of its workforce, which must provide resources to ensure workers' economic security and promote high standards for job quality, which begins with an accessible, affordable, and quality education. I'd also like to talk a little bit about some of the online classes and technology within the Minsky system. One of the benefits of today's higher educational atmosphere, compared to that of the late 80s, is the availability of online courses and programs. Minsky currently offers Minnesota Online, which offers more than 4,700 courses, and 150 programs via the Internet, and during the 2005-2006 academic year served approximately 42,120 students. Online courses offer non-traditional and working students great flexibility. Online flexibility sounds great for students because students have the ability to work around any type of schedule for classes, whether that be studying at 8 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night, weekends or holidays, as well as from anywhere you have Internet access. I've taken many online courses during my studies, and I have to be honest, though, they're not all that they're cracked up to be, nor what I expected. I didn't anticipate the amount of extra work that was involved in online classes. To try to make it simple, explanation is that online classes are different from the traditional classroom settings. With classroom settings, a student has the luxury of listening to lectures, asking questions that can be answered in a timely manner, and seeing the immediate results of your work, versus the online courses where you basically teach yourself the course by utilizing the textbooks and online materials that have been provided by the course. I would not be an advocate for discontinuing online courses because they are definitely beneficial to students such as myself who are trying to balance work and school, but point out that they are much more time-consuming and require a great deal of self-discipline and more in-depth learning because you are required to be much more involved in the crossover between teaching and learning. There are many problems and difficulties that I've encountered with the online courses, which has also caused many other students that I know to get frustrated and give up on the online classes. Funding technology would help solidify an infrastructure in Minnesota Online and support the much-needed student online services. I'd like to provide you with a little bit more details as to some of the problems that we're faced with online courses. First of all, the server seems to be very, very slow. To access information, especially downloads and assignments, worksheets, presentations, and your tests or quizzes. It doesn't seem to matter if I'm working on my home computer or if I'm on campus where the server is much faster. It's all slow and frequently freezes up when trying to access your work. There have been several times when I've been in the middle of work and suddenly the system freezes up while I'm working, and it gets really frustrating when you have to shut down the computer and start it over, especially when you haven't saved your work and you're forced to start over from the beginning. Many of the online tests and quizzes are also time quizzes, and when the system freezes up and you're on a time test, obviously you're losing time while you're waiting for your computer to think, and therefore many times I have not been able to finish the quiz because the time has run out. Next is the issue of uploading assignments and tests. There's been several times that I've attempted to upload the information and it never reaches the instructor, which causes a lot of problems for both instructors and students, especially when you think that you've turned everything in and taken your tests, and then come to find out later on when you check your grades and notice that you have a zero or an F on the project that the instructor never received it. Once this happens, it's very difficult to prove that you actually turned your work in on time to get your points, although instructors are more than willing to work with you most of the time as they're also aware of the problems that are associated with the online technology. I've worked on campus as a work-study student for instructors, and I've actually gotten the chance to use the faculty side of D2L, which is the short for Desire to Learn, of the online course of instruction that Alec Tech uses, and it's just as frustrating for instructors as it is for students. I've encountered the same problems with uploading grades for students when I try to post them to the system. The system freezes up, it doesn't post them, the students can't see them. They get in contact with the instructor. I've had to re-enter the grades many times to get them to post properly. There's been other times when I couldn't get the faculty side to work the way it was supposed to. I've gone to the instructors and asked them. They've come and tried to assist me with it, and what it ends up doing is, you know, ends up in a call to the help desk, which is not always a very quick response, especially during the peak use periods. I've talked with many other instructors, and these are very common problems, which have been on the Minsky Fix-It list for quite some time now. Finally, there's a limited availability of classes offered online. For many students, the flexibility is needed, however, impossible to avoid having to schedule work around regular classroom study. According to Minsky, the central server is over 90% utilized and needs to be expanded, which could account for some of the problems that students like me have faced. It's my understanding that Minsky would like to expand the availability of online classes and offer more to students, as well as to fix the current problems that the system is facing. I've worked with both local campus and Minsky committees, where there have been many discussions about the unreliability and inefficiencies of the current online system. The consensus of all the groups that I've worked with is that in order to address these concerns, the system will need some major changes. We've talked about it not only at the committee, but also with the Board of Trustees member, or the Board of Trustees, that an investment needs to be made into the technology and the online infrastructure with Minsky in order to fix the problems, as well as allow for any type of expansion of the online courses and offerings. However, without legislative support of this funding, my fears are that Minsky will not be able to address the problems for students, or worse yet, they'll proceed as they need to, but like past practice, at the expense of increases to student fees and tuition. During the past campaign season, there were many political candidates that made higher education a priority and offered solutions to the dilemmas that we're now facing. I urge you to further explore some of these ideas, ask the questions that need to be asked, fix the problems that need to be fixed as efficiently as possible. It's time to put a halt to the recent trends of relying on students to make up for the gaps in funding to the Minsky system. You as makers have the power and opportunity to make that difference, and now is the time to make higher education a priority in Minnesota. In my opinion, this can be accomplished by finding a legislative tuition freeze, funding inflationary increases, and providing additional funding for technology at our Minnesota State College University and our Minnesota State College University campus programs and services. This will not only benefit thousands of students from your districts, but also help keep the vitality of Minnesota's economic and prosperous future alive through an affordable, accessible, and quality public higher education system for tomorrow's workforce. Thank you, Chair Rukavina, and with that, I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Formal, for your presentation. And are there any questions from Mr. Formal at all? If not, we'll keep in mind some of the things you've suggested and appreciate your testimony. And I'm kind of stunned that you've accumulated $18,000 in debt at a two-year facility. I remember when the technical colleges were free. Remember that, Rev. Denha?
I do.
So thank you very much. Mr. Slinger from Detroit Lakes. Come on down. And welcome to the committee.
Okay, yeah, Mr. Chair. Sure.
I didn't hear what you said, Mr. Chair.
I said welcome to the committee, and why don't you just go ahead, start off by giving your name for the record and go ahead and do your presentation.
All right. My name is Tyler James Slinger, and I'm from Minnesota, the Minnesota State Community and Technical College located in Detroit Lakes. I do promise to be a bit more brief than Scott.
He's a politician, so we,
He is, isn't he? Well, my journey into the world of education started from a very young age, as I attended night class with my mother when she was going to community college, and she couldn't find daycare for me. So as a very young woman, and only as old as I am right now, she pretty much imprinted that high-quality education and having that education is imperative to moving forward in life. A small fact that I was just thinking of when I was sitting down is that I'm one of two graduates of pretty much the side of my family from high school, and I'm currently the only individual going to college from my mother's side of high school, or from my mother's side of her family. My grandparents kind of were reminiscing with me this Christmas and recall when I was just a little lad, and I'd come over and I'd have my little pencil and my paper, and I'd pretend to do my homework like my mother would. And actually, it just came out to be mostly scribbles and whatnot. But so when I was old enough to kind of start making my own decisions up in high school, I had decided to actually join the Army in order to continue my education and actually receive some pay for it. I signed up for a six-year stint in the Army, serving as a Special Forces candidate, which starts out as 11 Bravo and then progressively trains. At the last minute, I was medically dropped for genetic disorder that I'd had fixed and then came back. And I was disqualified and sent home without any benefits because I hadn't served. This was about 3 weeks before the semester started at school, and I intended to do something other than work at Perkins at the time, so I signed up at MSCTC in town. And although financial aid and grants have covered part of my tuition each semester, I have had to pay at least part of my tuition and all of my books since I started going to college. The overage of books and the overage of tuition and the cost of books have been paid primarily on credit cards, and for me saving from my full-time job over the summer and working part-time during the school year, cash to pay for those up front. My parents, whose income is counted when the FAFSA is calculated, would like to help more, but their incomes are used to usually support the household expenditures, be it food, rent, and also paying off my mother's student loans. By the time I'm finished with just these first 2 years of school, I will have accumulated a debt of $5,000 in loan and will have paid out of my pocket an accumulated debt on credit cards of over $4,000. Probably the most disheartening event over the last 2 years was at the beginning of the school year when I was going to the bookstore to purchase my books, five books to be exact, and I had $400 in cash that I had accumulated from working the summer. And I went in, and I found out that I only had to buy 4 books, but in fact that it would cost me more than $400 for those 4 books. Well, to say the least, I didn't buy one of the books. I bought the rest of them, and I shared with a friend of mine for the majority of the semester and took notes of him. So, and after finishing these 2 years, getting my AA towards a teaching degree, I really will have no way after these 2 years of starting to pay back my debt and or the credit card loans. And I would like to leave you with a couple questions in mind. If a single young man who's still living with his parents and has very few expenditures actually to pay out of his income is having a hard time affording college, what about people that are returning, like the majority of people on my campus, be with kids or their families that they have to take care of? So thank you for your time, Mr. Chair, and I will yield to questions.
Any questions at all?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your testimony. I'm interested about your comments about the cost of your textbooks. Do you know? Did your faculty make available to you previous editions? I teach myself, and oftentimes we get pressure to use the new updated version, which has a different color cover. And perhaps other, and then the textbook manufacturer doesn't make the previous edition even available to the bookstore. In your case, were any previous editions made available to you through your college or from your instructors, or were you pretty much forced to purchase the new textbooks?
To be serious, I never asked the instructor if I could use a previous edition. I just went for the book list and tried to look either on Amazon.com, eBay, and find lower prices is pretty much what I was concerned about. So I don't know if they would allow that or not. So,
Mr. Chairman, I think this would be a great issue for this committee as well.
Well, members, and Mr. Slinger, I would think that, that the local school would at least put a couple copies in the library and probably should get them free from the author or whoever they're purchasing them from. That would seem to be at least one simple solution. Rather than sharing with a friend, you could go to the library and doodle on the book in there then instead.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
My understanding is that there generally is a few textbooks in the library, but they're almost always checked out. I know one young woman who's been looking for one. Every semester she's been at school and has never been able to find one in the textbook listed in the catalog at the library the school she goes to. So they are there. They're just always gone. Helping students such as this. We should have more.
Well, Representative Moore, when the Minsky bureaucrats come up here, you can
give them budget, Mr. Chairman.
They probably are. I think they're hiding behind the IC.
We get a college prop to question, too.
Oh, eventually. Representative Welty, did you have a question?
Thank you, Chairman Rukavina. Mr. Slinger, first of all, I want to thank you for coming and testifying on behalf of the students across the state of Minnesota. It wasn't too long ago that I was attending Minnesota State University, Mankato, and
we were going to mention that.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, and when I was at Minnesota State, I know I took advantage of qualifying for student loans. And when the student loans weren't made available through the federal program, I ended up going to my local banking institution and was able to take out a loan, and they later sold that loan to Sallie Mae. And my question to you is, I am very concerned whenever I see students putting charges on their credit card, especially for loans for college, because these can be sizable loans and you're paying a very high interest rate. When you came upon this situation where you had to start charging on your credit card, did you go to your higher ed institution and ask them for alternative sources of funding? Did you go to your local bank? Did you check to find out if you qualified for any other sources of funding? And I'm asking you this not to give you counsel, but I'm asking you this just to find out if this is a situation that needs to be addressed across the state with other students.
Mr. Slinger, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am aware there is a self-loan that one can take out. You do need co-signers for these, and I do believe that they also do background checks and things, or not the background, but the credit reports for loans. I have attempted to take out a loan previously, but these also, you need co-signers. usually with good credit, things like that. And I think that's pretty much all I've exhausted. Before I went to credit cards, my primary use for credit cards is that you pay them off as fast as possible. I also have a friend that gave me a hand with part of his, and we usually try to keep them on the 0% APR and then pay them off as quick as possible. It's part of my tuition was on there at one time. It's usually a matter of time as well, is that loans take time to process. They either want collateral, et cetera, where a credit card you can get, you know, they send them to you in the mail, and you can apply for them and then pay off whatever you need to pay off at the time.
Okay, any other questions? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. And before we bring down Mr. Adar Saheli, did I get that name right? Adar Saheli? We would have Representative Haas and Representative Atkins introduce themselves. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself? You're the only Haas,
right? No, I picked this panel chair because college was the 6th best years of my life.
That's when you could get by in 2 years, right?
I went in the summer.
I'm a representative of 15B, which is the St. Cloud area, and we're proud of our colleges there, our state college, our VOTEC, and we have quite a few private colleges, as well as a private business college, and I'm excited to be on here. Sorry I was late for class. I'll try not to do it again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're lucky it only took you 6 years. I spoiled it by going to law school. So, Joe Atkins, I represent Invergrove Heights, South St. Paul, and South Fish Lake, and I'm happy to be there. I also have Inver Hills Community College and Dakota County Technical College nearby. Thank you.
Nice to have both of you here. Go ahead, David, and you pronounce your last name for the committee.
My name is David Itar Saheli. It's okay. We actually planned on you screwing that up to begin with, so it was expected.
Would you care to pronounce my last name?
I think they're both. Chair, I would be more than happy to. I met him in Virginia, so I got a heads up on that one.
You go ahead and go start your testimony. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Actually, before I start, there are a couple questions from Mr. Slinger that I actually know of because we brought in the administrator for our campus bookstore for student senate meetings, and she actually gave us packets and handouts about where their costs come from and where they go. And one of the big things that I found surprising was that our bookstore supports our cafeteria, which loses money. So our inflated textbook costs are going to pay for an unused cafeteria, which does provide quality food and services, but the distinction between the two is still unfair to students who are paying increased costs all across the board. But anyway, like I said,
thank you.
Yeah. No problem, sir. My name is David Testa Haley, and I am a sales and management student at the St. Cloud Technical College. I live in Representative Haas District. I graduated from Sartell. And then my parents, and actually I was born in North Mankato, my parents attended Mankato State University. So I've pretty much been all across the state here. Good times. I'm here today to describe how the rising cost of tuition and textbooks are affecting me, how technology is underutilized, and how the hardships of being a non-traditional student with disabilities affects me and other students that I know. Tuition in Minnesota has risen dramatically over the last 10 years, as we all know. I qualify for both state and federal grants, so they cover most of the cost of my tuition. But I do need to take out student loans to cover a little bit on the tail end, and also textbooks and some living expenses because I try to spend more time for school than work, which is pretty much what school's for. Besides taking out over $3,000 in loans this year, I work 25 hours a week at a well-paying job, so I am the exception and not the rule to students in Minnesota, rural Minnesota anyway. I have several students who I attend classes with as well as friends who work upwards of 50 hours a week plus have full course loads because, one, their jobs don't pay them well, and, two, they couldn't qualify for the financial aid because of their parents. Which is a federal issue, I know, but comes from the state. After I graduate from St. Cloud, from the technical college. I do wish to go to a university. I haven't quite decided which one, for a degree in marketing, and finally a PhD in economics, because I hope to rule the world one day. Got to start somewhere. Walmart's a nice place to go. As long as you're in the upper management part, not on sales floor. And by the time I get my BA, I'm planning to have upwards of $20,000 in student loans, just because that's the way college is. The global technology is growing at a faster rate than any other time in history. It's only limited by our imagination. With this being said, the technology on university campuses is limited by our spending, or the increases in student fees. One problem that we have on our campus is that our computers are, on average, about 3 to 4, 6 years old in some classrooms. What that means is that they not only do not run programs that we need to learn, but they're useless in terms of teaching us job skills for an economic environment that promotes social growth, or economic growth. Sorry, I deviated the first and got lost.
That's all right.
As Mr. Formo did, I also had classes that utilized D2L, and we had the same problems, so I don't really go into those, but they're exactly the same from the teacher side as well as the student side. I had one class that worked well out of four, and that actually really showed me how D2L is and what it could be. And that was when they first came out with it, roughly 4 or 5 years ago. This is my second stint in college, which I'm doing a lot better at. And I'm proud to say I'm actually glad that I had that first D2L class, because I could utilize the underfunded D2L now at a degree where other students couldn't, so I could help them out as well. But what we'd like to see is a better system that not only utilizes the resources that were already invested, but shows growth because we've already spent the money, so we should spend the money to expand on those as well. The final thing I wish to discuss are student services. Like I said, I'm a non-traditional student. I'm also technically disabled, but I don't really consider myself so. I have a bipolar disorder, and I'm also slightly ADD. Neither of those two circumstances really affect me greatly, given to play every once in a while. But I do cope with them fairly well. The one downfall I have is note-taking. So I needed to go consult with some of our student services. They helped me out. They got me copies of the PowerPoints, stuff like that. Things which could be found on D2L, but are too hard to find otherwise. But I'm lucky in the fact that it is mild. I was a peer tutor my second semester at the Tech College, and I ran into at least 10, 15, 20 kids that I knew of, which was there always more, who were failing, who were getting D's, hating school, going to drop out, go work at McDonald's, Walmart, be a drain on the economy. But because I knew of the services, I was able to direct them to get help. They ended up getting A's in their classes, which gave them confidence and a better academic record and ability to succeed, not only to go to the two-year college, but now several of them are going to go to university. Probably St. Cloud State, but it's still a great school. In closing, I'd just like to thank you for allowing us to speak today, and to remind you that higher education is the cornerstone of Minnesota's social and economic stability, and that as it has been underfunded for the last 10 years, it's time to reevaluate our current situation and invest in it now, when it is not only cheaper to do so than in the future, but also more important to do so than now and in the future, because there's no better time than the present. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions from the committee members? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you please explain D2L a little bit more?
What D2L is a web-based system that FAFSA uses to post PowerPoints, readings. It's also a communication tool. We can talk to not only faculty, but if we have group projects and stuff, we can form groups and communicate that way, so that we don't necessarily need to be at school, but we can transfer information to each other back and forth.
Okay.
Chair, I had a question about, you talked about being a peer tutor and that you were able to help students get information that they apparently weren't getting elsewhere. Do you have a suggestion? It seems to me there's a gap somewhere in information getting to students about student supports that might help them be better students.
Okay. That's Connor, I have.
One part is that it is the student's willingness to find out about those programs. So it is partly personal accountability, which I agree with. The other part is also the time involved with talking to every student on campus is astronomical. So there's already limited resources for those services, so they can't really take the time to have one of the representatives go to every classroom and talk to a student. So I'd probably say, to answer your question, the gap comes just between miscommunication or lack thereof.
Could I follow up with that?
Sure. Go ahead.
I'm wondering, is this, when you talk about meeting with students one-on-one, is the perhaps the gap there in counseling services? Is that where you get this information? Or is it upon enrollment?
For the peer tutors or for the services? Or either or?
Both.
Well, for peer tutors, our college set up the pseudo classroom where students come in and teachers actually announce that there's help there. It's usually for gen eds, accounting, math classes. There are textbooks and stuff that will help assist other students in technical programs, but they'll need to see their instructors more so for that kind of help. That is discussed at orientation and whatnot, but again, there's so much information given to you your first 2 weeks of school. How much of it can you really remember and understand and know what they do for you when you don't really know what's going on to begin with?
Okay, any other questions? Representative Haas.
Yes, do you have any courses where the text is on the computer?
David?
Currently, no. I did have one at St. Cloud State, which was actually great because... And actually, I did have one at the Technical College. The teacher didn't buy the book, but we couldn't take anything home because of copyright issues and whatnot. But it did cut the cost of the class greatly because we would have needed several different books for that one class.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
It's mystifying to me why an institution that is based on technology does not move that pace faster and allow students to have computer text.
Representative Haas, that's a good question for when the administration gets in front of the committee. Thank you very much. If there are no other questions, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, and the next testifier is Jacob Littler from my alma mater, Mesabi Community College. And Jacob is, I think, he's active on the campus. He invited Senator Tomasoni and Representative Sertich and myself to Mesabi before the campaign. Didn't have that big of a turnout, but...
Well, to be fair, we did invite your opponents as well, but...
Yes, you did, but...
They decided not to show.
I know. You know, I was going to mention that.
Their loss.
Welcome to the committee, Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina and members. I thank you for convening this session and for inviting the students to speak. I think it'll give you the best chance to get a picture of the issues that are facing students in higher education. As the chair said, my name is Jacob Littler. I'm currently enrolled at Mesabi Range Community and Technical College in Virginia. I serve on the Campus Student Association. I'm also a member of Phi Theta Kappa, which is the International Honor Society for two-year colleges. I'm entering this spring semester just 22 credits short of transferring with my AA. It's my hope to move on eventually to one of the universities in the Minsky system, work on my bachelor's degree in political science, which you should appreciate, and eventually I'd like to get my master's and work in higher ed either as an instructor or possibly someday run for office. So keep your
eye out for me. Not against me.
No, not against you. That's, I'll have to move, obviously.
He's not that young.
You can. We'll move you to, Sartell or somewhere in Cambridge, one of those areas, okay?
It has always been an ambition of mine to continue my education. For as long as I can remember, I knew that I would be going on to college. Ultimately, I'd like to receive my doctorate and, as I said, work in higher education as an instructor, perhaps an administrator, but just to serve students. And as I said, maybe run for office because you can have a great impact from that position as well. And I believe these attitudes mostly stem from the way that I was raised. My mother was a single parent growing up in Duluth, trying to go to St. Scholastica later on, but for many years she had to delay that education because she was raising myself and my older brother. And obviously, she waited for us to get into school so that she would have daytime free, go to classes, trying to work several jobs. And it did. It delayed her education and it delayed her career. And so she instilled in us this strong respect and desire to continue our education as swiftly as possible. So you can imagine the frustration that I felt when I graduated from high school and found that my family couldn't support my education. Unfortunately, my parents had, as I said, my mom was a single parent raising us. They had split up when I was very young. I had moved back to Minnesota to live with my father following his divorce, just to help out around the house, things like that. Shortly after I graduated from high school, my father lost his job at LTV Mining, as we'll all remember when that happened, and he really wasn't therefore able to contribute to my education costs. In addition to this, the financial aid system left me with few options because the income that my father did make counted against my expected family contribution. That just kind of highlights a situation where the financial aid system and the higher education system with tuition going up, and you know, financial aid does match that tuition rise for the most part, but it leaves out the middle class. It leaves out the students that are from working families. My dad made so much money, according to the government, that we didn't qualify for financial aid, but he didn't have the money to help me go to college. And so that burden falls onto me. In spite of these obstacles, right out of high school, I made an attempt. Between taking a full load of classes and working a couple jobs, I didn't last very long. Part of it was immaturity, part of it was just the level of stress that was on me. And this put me in the position of then having to enter the workforce with nothing more than my high school diploma and a desire to do something, that Minnesota work ethic that we use to sell to the businesses, get them up here, because we have great workers on the range. But unfortunately, a high school diploma and good work ethic won't really get you that far on the Iron Range. So I got stuck in a series of low-wage jobs trying to save up the money to go to college while at the same time being confronted with these new bills that I'd never seen growing up with my parents. All of a sudden, I'm paying rent and I'm paying car insurance and I'm putting gas in my car and I'm buying food and I'm trying to deck out an apartment, and it all adds up to the point where trying to save for college wasn't really realistic. So for 6 years, I continued this cycle of low wages that just barely covered the bills. I'd go back to the college occasionally. I'd check. I'd try to register, and I'd fill out all the financial aid forms, and every time I would be denied because, you know, 1 year my dad tapped into his 401k, but he didn't qualify for a hardship. Despite losing his job and then having half his pension taken by the Federal Pension Board, he didn't qualify for a hardship, so therefore that 401k money that he took was taxable income, which then hurt my financial aid because of the independent student laws regarding financial aid. So I would go and I would be denied, and since all of the money that I was making at the time was really just going to pay for bills and, you know, maybe go to a movie once every 3 months if I was lucky, I didn't really see it as a possibility to try to add college classes into that mix and really add more stress and more money going out to that. Finally, at the age of 24, because of the way the financial aid laws are written, I was considered an independent student, according to the federal government, and I was able to apply for financial aid on the merits of my own income. So armed with a full package of grants, loans, and scholarships, I re-entered the world of higher education. I was shocked when I came back to Mesabi Range to see the amount of money that was going to be going out. I received my first tuition notice and saw that I would be paying $130 of credit. When I had gone originally in 2000, I believe it was in the neighborhood of $70 to $80 a credit. That's a huge increase in the 6 years that I was unable to go to college. This year, because of the tuition increases, it's up to $141 per credit. When you add on to that the fees, technology fees, access fees, online learning fees, I pay $25 per credit for every online course that I take. In addition to that, I have to buy books and I have to buy supplies. And the way the world is now, I need a computer to be able to do my homework at home and get it done. Otherwise, I'm stuck in the computer lab at the college, which is why I pay that technology fee. Either way, I'm paying for it. You really end up with a huge bill. The amount that I'm paying for my education with the fees, the books, the supplies, is so much that despite the full Pell Grant, Minnesota State Grant, the full package that I can get of financial aid, I'm still forced to take out Stafford loans, and I'm putting books and supplies on credit cards because one of the problems with financial aid, and it's a very good thing that they do because they delay the financial aid payout until the ninth day of class. And that's to make sure that you're going to stay past the drop-add day, that you're actually going to be going to classes, and that you're going to use that money for class, and that they're not just throwing it out there. But when you don't get that check until the ninth day of class, and you're going paycheck to paycheck, you're not going to walk into the bookstore with $400 in cash, as one of the previous speakers said. I didn't have the $400 in cash, so I go in with a credit card, or I go 9 days without books. I'm sure the majority of the members have been to college. Can you do 9 class days without the test? It's not going to work very well for you, and you're going to be digging out from a hole. This combination of the credit card debt and the student loan debt is just going to leave me in debt for many years to come following graduation. Now, I'm in college now because I want to better my position in society. I don't want to work minimum wage jobs. I don't want to just scrape by week to week, paycheck to paycheck. And I wish I could have had the advantage of going right into my undergraduate degree fresh out of high school. So I could be well on my way right now to achieving the goals that I have. I want to work in higher education because I've seen the impact that a great teacher or a great administrator can have on a student. I've had that impact on me. I've seen what a teacher can do to your life and give you direction. And specifically a political science teacher that I have that really has opened my eyes to what you can do if you get involved in systems like this. And again, running for office, I would love to do that, and I would love to be in this position because you guys have an amazing, amazing opportunity to leave this state better than you found it. And I would love to have that opportunity as well. And just there's a little blurb at the end of my statement that as I was writing it, it occurred to me, and I thought it was really interesting, that to put all of this in perspective, when Majority Leader Tony Sertich was my age, 25, he had graduated college and had just been elected to his first term in the House of Representatives. I'll be 28 before I get my undergraduate degree completed. With tuition climbing the way that it's been, I'm not even sure how much debt I'll have. Right now I'm carrying about $5,000, and that's as of this semester once my loans pay out. By the time I finish my 4-year, like I said, with tuition going the way it is, I don't even know where that debt level is going to be when I graduate. I know all of the members sitting here know the legislative salary. So imagine making hundreds of dollars in loan payments off of that salary and still trying to support a family and still trying to support a home. Just to jokingly say it, as I said, I want to run for office, but high tuition may have deprived Minnesota of one of the future legislative stars for a few years. So I would just ask, though, and I would challenge the committee to keep my story, the stories that you've heard from the other students, and the goals that we have. We want to get education. We want to come out and be productive members of society, and we want to help make Minnesota better. But when we come out with, as I believe I've heard Chair Ruckovina said a few times, when we come out with a mortgage payment and no house, that leaves us in a really detrimental position to try to do these things, to try to achieve our goals. And so keep those stories in mind and keep those goals in mind, and remember that we want to be a good part of this society as you're making the decisions that are going to affect the students of this state for the years to come. And if I could just touch real briefly on a textbook issue that has come up in the last couple speakers. We actually had our library come to our student life committee. And I don't want to get too much into the structure of how everything works, but we pay a student life fee per credit, and that money goes into a huge fund that the students are basically in charge of with administrative input, and we have an advisor. But ultimately, the decision on where that money goes, it supports our athletics, it supports our clubs, Phi Theta Kappa, our student senates, so that they can do their advocacy work. And our library came to us and asked us if we could find room in our budget to purchase books for the courses on our campus. Well, this is student money, and the students are already buying their own books for the classes that they have to take. And then we have the staff of the school coming and asking us to buy books to leave on loan in the library in case somebody can't afford their book. And as I said, I've been in the position of not being able to afford my books, so I understand
being in that position and how frustrating it can be. But there's something wrong in that system when the school has to come to the students to ask for that money and to try to get that system set up. And what you said about having books in the library or you know, on hold somewhere is a great, great idea, because it does give you that opportunity to go in and take the notes and look at the assignments and read the reading assignment. But it needs to be the school and the faculty that are absorbing that, not the students. And so I just wanted to give that picture of how it's been on my campus. And if there's any questions that the members have, Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Jacob. It's a pleasure to have you come down. And I do have to say that I don't think Minnesota's been deprived of your, you know, bright stardom yet. Something tells me you'll be around for a while. Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, and thank all of the students for coming and giving the testimony. It's been very enlightening, and it certainly is something that I, as a counselor at a community college, hear many times on a regular basis, students that are frustrated with the lack of funding and the great number of dollars that they're putting forth for their education. I had a question about the bookstore and a little bit about that. Do you know, does your school allow for a deferred payment system if they know that you're getting financial aid, or if you've made some arrangement? Can you get your books with knowing that your money is coming in?
Great question, and I'm feeling very bad that I forgot to mention that, because that's another issue that's the reason why I was stuck without books. Our school has come up with a blanket policy now, and it's pretty common throughout the system that basically, no, you can't do book deferments anymore. And the problem is that tuition has gone up so much, and although financial aid has increased, you know, it hasn't increased at the same rate, and some financial aid has been cut. So you're seeing a smaller and smaller window between where your tuition is and where your financial aid is. For me personally, because I take advantage of the Stafford loans and the work study, and I do have full grants, I would have enough money to cover my books. But it's a blanket policy. There are no book deferments. And so that's where my option at that point is 9 class days without books, or put it on a credit card, or borrow money somehow, get a hold of the money to get these books. And even buying used books or buying online, it's a large expense. If you're lucky, you can find something on Amazon.com for, you know, half price or something. But the reality is, if you need the book right then, you need it then, and you're going to be stuck going to the bookstore. And, you know, you end up paying that inflated price for the book.
Thank you. I know Representative Murphy and Hartman had a question, but we do have one more student to testify, Ms. Bidwell, and she's come from Mankato, and I don't want her to miss out, because Representative Bryant would be mad at me if her constituent didn't get the talk.
So I would definitely hold.
Why don't we hold those questions, if we could bring down Karen Bidwell? Would you come down, and then if you have any other questions for Jacob or the rest of the folks. Representative Murphy, is that okay?
Yes, that's fine, Mr. Chair. That was a good solution. But could I give the question?
You can give the question.
There is no time to answer. I don't need the answer now. But from one of the students, and I was going to pick Jacob because he was the most open. Could you just give me, jot down for me, what's your personal property that you own?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd appreciate that. I'd appreciate that. Just an example.
Okay. He's got a sport coat, a couple of shirts, and hey, Karen, come on down and welcome to the committee, Ms. Bidwell. Introduce yourself and go right in into your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Karen Bidwell. I'm a full-time student at South Central College in Mankato. I will be graduating this May in the Legal Administrative Assistance Program. I'd like to talk about financial aid and skyrocketing tuition and what it has meant to me and my family. To give you a little background about me, I'm 24. I'm a wife, mother, and I'm a work-study employee at the school. I also try to stay active in student government and in my community. To say the least, I stay very busy. In fall 2002, I attended Rasmussen College in Mankato. After one quarter and nearly $2,500 in tuition, in addition to daycare and books, I could not afford to pay my other bills. I decided that my family and I could not, to pay our bills, so I dropped out of college and started working full-time in retail and then in various other employments. With the goal that when my daughter went to kindergarten, that I would start up with school again, that would get rid of the daycare costs. After some time went by, I realized that all jobs that I could get were not creating a successful future for me and my family. My daughter finally started kindergarten, and I went back to school to get my degree. Not only did I go back to college, but my husband also chose to go back. We looked at several different opportunities or different schools. One was Brown College in Mendota Heights. We were considering moving, but we were going to get our 4-year in 3 years. And when we got the price tag, it was $160,000. That's a lot of money. That's a house to us. So we could not go there, and we chose to go to South Central together. He took a full course load and continues to work 30 hours a week. Balancing school, work, and our home has not been an easy task, and at many times has caused financial hardships. I have been fortunate to receive work study as part of my financial aid packet. This means that instead of taking my unsubsidized loan, I can earn the money through the school and not have to worry about the interest. Although I rely on subsidized loans to cover a portion of my expenses, I have always taken out the work-study option over taking a second loan. There are several reasons for this. First, while school is in session, the income is tax-exempt. Second, why should I take out another loan when I can earn the money? Third, South Central pays more than working in fast food. Last year, at the end of the spring semester, I lost my work-study position because the college ran out of funds and had to make cuts. I depended on this money. This hurt my family a lot because we're dependent on both my family and I, or my husband and I, having an income. And I was reliant on my work-study. Even though I was promised the same position when the new fiscal year started, to finish out the school year, I had to take out my unsubsidized loan that I had been trying to avoid. I did try to find another job, but I had a hard time finding one because nobody wants to waste money training a student that plans to return to a work-study position in July. Unfortunately, when I returned at the start of the new fiscal year, I found my work-study position had been changed into a full-time permanent position, one that had already been filled by a new employee. Aside from the issues of funding, work study is great. It's not an internship, but it's a great way to get job experience in a variety of areas. With my major, having office experience makes me more marketable job applicant and more valuable employee. In preparing to speak here, I went to the financial aid office to find out what actually happened with the funding last year. I was informed by the end of the spring semester, the work study will again run out of funds and the students will lose their jobs. I am going to be forced into trying to find another job before my supervisor tells me not to come in the next day. If I can't find a job that pays what my work study job paid or isn't as flexible, I will be forced into taking out the loans to stay afloat financially. I do believe that tuition is too high and has surpassed what students can afford. Having a work-study position helps many students, but it is not enough to cover all the expenses of college education. Tuition is too high and funding is inadequate, and I do not believe that you can fix all the problems with high cost of education at once. But I do believe that if you focus on increasing funding in both tuition and work study, the burden of debt on students will be lessened. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Bidwell, for your testimony. And you're going to graduate this spring, is that what you indicated?
I will graduate. I'll be able to walk. But because I started at Rasmussen and how it transferred, I am 0.3 credits away from being done, so I have to come back for one credit this summer.
And what's, if you don't mind me asking, what do you think your debt is, or what do you know your debt is right now?
My debt or my husband's and mine together?
Just yours, I was.
Fortunately, mine's only around 6, but my husband's is around 11.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any questions, Ms. Bidwell? Now, Representative Mahone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would that be 2 years with the school or 4 years with the school debt? For your 16, I think there's 17,000. Maybe I'm doing the math wrong.
For you and your husband.
For me and my husband, we're both taking two-year programs, but his is going to take a little longer.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions of Ms. Bidwell or maybe of the representative? And if Representative Hartman, if you want to have time for Jacob up there, too. But go ahead, Gina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be a personal question that you may choose not to answer. But when you were considering private colleges and you determined that the cost was too expensive, why wasn't a state university or college your first choice?
Ms. Biddle?
Brown College is that you can get your bachelor's in 3 years, and that really, was nice, and that's why we looked at that. 4 year, it really doesn't work in our situation. We're non-traditional, and we just didn't feel that that would work. And at the time, we just went up there to get information, and when they handed us the price tag, I think my jaw hit the floor. When I could get my face back together, I think we walked out the door. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative Harmon, did you have a question?
Sure, and maybe you can answer from where he is. My question for Jacob was just, was the event that made you able to finally get the money to go to school was that you turned 25, did I hear that right?
24.
The
independent student aid for federal financial aid.
Okay, that's my question.
Okay, well, if there are no other questions, I really want to thank all of the students for coming. Thank all of you for your attentiveness. And tomorrow we're going to have students in from the metro area. So we'll try to keep them a little shorter in time because we made it through this only because they're one of our testifiers is missing. So we'll see you tomorrow at 12:30. Meeting adjourned.